Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hello. Before we start the show, I wanted to send a quick message to those who are aiming to run the London Marathon next year. Now, I know the ballot places came out today, and I know lots of people have entered the championship race. And if you're lucky enough to have a place in 2020, then Shelter would really like to be part of their team. There's no minimum fundraising target when you have your own place. You just raise whatever you can, and you'll be joining a team of 200 runners who are together aiming to raise over £450,000. Now, obviously, running the marathon is a huge challenge, and this year, let's get running. We'll be aiming to provide coaching support. So we'll be providing training plans, and we're putting on a marathon workshop we can attend and get some advice on how to approach the marathon from a training perspective, and also some fundraising tips from Shelter. On the day itself, obviously, there'll be lots of cheer points along the course to keep you going. And at the end of the race, there'll be a hero's welcome at the post-race reception. There'll be complimentary food, drinks, and that all-important post-marathon massage. Team Shelter really needs you this year. In the UK, it's estimated that every 19 hours, a person who is homeless dies. And it's not just those who are sleeping rough who are affected. Statistics estimate that more than 30% of deaths since 2017 have actually occurred where people were living in emergency or temporary accommodation. We desperately need to fight for more stable homes for families, older renters, and working people. And we need to give advice to people who don't know where to turn. Shelter needs your help to deliver this. So when you fundraise for Shelter, you'll be changing the lives of millions of people who suffer every year from bad housing or homelessness. You'll be making sure they get access to advice, support, and legal services they need. You're part of a movement which is fighting to make sure that one day no one needs to turn to Shelter for help. It's great if you can be involved. If you want to be part of Team Shelter, and you just want to, or you just want to find out a bit more information, then please email running@shelter.org.uk, and Helen will be there to help you. Now, on with the show. Hello. Welcome along to the Let's Get Running podcast. How is the Caramel Kid?
What? I'm good. What's Sean, wet devil saying?
He's sitting in his front room. He's just got the baby to bed. It's evening time on what day are we? Tuesday? I can't remember the date, but it's the day before it comes out. But yeah, enjoying himself. He's tired, as always. So he woke up at 4:30 this morning.
What's been going on? You said that you nearly ruined someone's race. Come on.
Yeah, well, this Sunday was Amsterdam Marathon in Amsterdam, so I thought we'd go and have a bit of a watch. So I did my 2-hour run. Around to halfway around the course, and then I ran back following the Kenyans. Obviously not at their pace, but they kind of went past me as I'd run along the course, or the side of the course. And I was just basically shouting. Most of the time I was shouting the wrong thing. So like when I was in Ethiopia, I learned about three words, and I didn't, because most of the women
Mzungu,
yeah, goat. No, that sounds racist. I learned Salamno, which is just hello, right? Isn't it? Salamno. Ishi, which is just like hi. And eyes on, which is, I think, go, go, go. So if you say eyes on, I think that's go, go. I'm probably pronouncing these completely wrong. If you speak Amharic, you probably can, you know, I'm probably sound like a complete idiot. But I was, I was shouting these things. But I realised I was shouting hello to everybody. So I was shouting, Ishi, to all these blokes. And they're looking at me like, what is this guy shouting hello to me about? So that was quite funny. And then... Ross Skelton come past. So Ross is, he's run, I think he used to run for Brighton Phoenix, but he now runs for Hastings, right? I know you know a lot of guys from Phoenix. So I know of Ross. We don't know each other very well, but I saw him come past. He's running really well. He was off the front of the women's pack. And my calculations, right, when I was running, like, I was looking at the clocks and stuff, and he went past, I don't know, was it 35K or 30K? And I thought, oh, he's just missed out on 220, but I'll give him a shout because he'd be, you know, if I can push him on, he might get low 220s. So I shouting, go on, Ross. You missed 220, but you might get low 220s. And he looked at me like, what? And then he started looking down at his watch. And he was thinking, what the hell's going on? And I completely got the time wrong. So he was running like 218, 219 pace. I completely threw him off his running. I don't think I ruined it for him. Maybe I pushed him on. Because maybe he heard that and thought, right, I better pick it up. So I'm taking credit for this. I think he ran 219.
What did he get?
I think he got 219.20. So I think I might have pushed him on. I'm going to take the credit for that, Ross.
Well, you should have checked. You should have asked him what he pace where he was, because
oh, yeah.
if they got chip, you figure out where you cheered him on and what pace he was at that point. Then you could know if you boosted him or not.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I think it's a hard race, that one. It's like it's not as good as London, because like there was loads of guys. Well, I think the first 12 finished within 2:09, and the guys at the top, like guys you would never heard of, Vincent Chipchumba, he ran 2:05:09. So they're going real, like they're top quality marathon runners, but you wouldn't have heard of them really.
Chipchumba.
Chipchumba. That's Dixon Chipchumba.
You get that in your Christmas pudding, Chipchumba.
A nice bit of Chipchumba for dinner, yeah. So that was nice. He won it, but it's really good up until about 2:10, and then from about 2:10 through to about 2:30, it's like people on their own for ages. So like if you want to run to 2:19 like Ross did, you've got to mostly do it on your own, which is really tough. I saw a guy, Frank Futsala, who's a Dutch guy I know, he ran 2:14:08. He was mainly running on his own for long periods. That's not good. So I don't know if they can. I don't know.
Yeah, but maybe it's easier to get into rather than, because, you know, like sometimes they might not get the entries or they get a bad start or, you know.
Yeah. I mean, if you're Dutch, it's the biggest marathon, right? So you do it if you're Dutch. But I think if you're English, you'd have to make sure if you're going to run those sorts of times, you'd need a bit of help, I think, and probably not the best to go for. But if you're running between 2:20 and 2:30, I mean, a lot of guys, like I know Rob Wilson from Highgate, he was down, I met up with him. He ran pretty well because he had a group to run with. Around 2:25, 2:26, but faster than that, it's very sporadic.
But you say that, but sometimes it might be easier on your own because you've done all the training on your own and you're used to going a set pace, and as soon as you get in a race with people, things go out the window. So if you're in a race where there's big gaps, at least you can just concentrate on your own pace.
True, but I think in a marathon you just need some kind of, because you're pushing so hard mentally, you're just under strain, you need something to help you push on. I don't know. That's what I think anyway. But hey, what have you been up to? You've been ruining anyone's race and driving past anyone?
Yeah, everything's back line the rope. And then obviously some craziness last week.
Yeah.
So I was obviously on long, long shifts.
Yeah.
Put up to the stop. Obviously people were getting on. And then there's no one there. Closes the doors. And this guy's slowly strolling towards the bus. Yeah. And he puts his hand out. I was thinking, yeah, don't rush. I've got all day. Yeah. So I open the door, let him on. And like he's got like takeaway chips, you know, like chicken and chips.
Yeah.
And then he's in one hand, and then he's got like a bag of something else in the other hand.
Yeah.
And he's still eating his chips, so he's eating it with his face. So, you know, like he's sticking his face in the chicken box, right?
Yeah.
And this is a fully grown man, like 45. And so he's got like mayonnaise, burger sauce on his chin, his nose, and I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Right? And he gets on and he just walks past. Yeah, yeah, I'll come back with my pass. I was like, yeah, yeah, whatever. Yeah. I close the doors, I'm driving along, and then he's moaning because obviously I didn't wait for him to sit down. And obviously he's wobbling. Yeah. I was thinking, I don't know who this guy thinks he is.
Yeah.
And then he starts cussing. I was thinking, okay. And then he obviously, the bell rings, we get to a stop, and he's slowly getting up. So I can see that he wants to get off.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you know what? I'm gonna obviously be awkward. So yeah. I close the doors, right?
Yeah.
But I wasn't gonna drive off, but I just closed the doors just to like make him mad.
Yeah.
And I closed the doors, and then he started swearing. I was like, hell no. So I drove to the next stop. Right, then he comes to the front, and then he's going crazy again. Yeah. And the doors are open. Yeah. And I said you better get off now or I'm gonna drive you to the next stop. Okay. so he decides to stand halfway in and halfway out.
Yeah.
Something, and if I close the door on him, his food's gonna go everywhere. And then he's moaning and cussing, and then I said, do you want me to call the police? And he goes, oh, why are you going to call the police? You're being racist because I'm a black man. I was like, whoa. I said, I'm half black. And he went, I don't care what you are. And then he got off the bus. I was thinking, what an idiot.
You should have shut his chips in the door. You should have shut his face in the door. That would have been more funny. Like the blowfish from a few years ago.
Yeah. I should have done that, but yeah.
The life and times of a bus driver. It's not fun, Jermaine, right? When you've got people like that. He had a few too many.
No, he wasn't drunk. He was just stupid.
Crazy.
That's the only way I put it. Because he weren't mentally disturbed.
Yeah.
He was just an idiot.
Yeah. We're coming up to one of the best nights of the year, aren't we, Jermaine, for being a bus driver?
Halloween. Or fireworks night.
Both of them, yeah. You're going to start getting fireworks thrown at the bus when you're driving around.
Well, yeah, they tell all the bus drivers to keep the windows closed because obviously the kids always fire fireworks.
Nah. Into windows.
Yeah. Yeah, and even now they've been trying to do it into the doors when people are getting off.
Jesus. Do not live in London, everybody. Move out. Find yourself a new city to live in.
It's dodgy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Halloween, anyway. Obviously everyone's just in costume, so
you can cope with that. Yeah.
That's fine.
Well, you're coming over here. We're trying to get you in a cross-country race, right?
Supposedly. Yeah. We'll see.
Well, luckily it won't happen because the big one is here on the 14th of December. So fortunately, you're safe for another year. Jermaine hasn't got to do cross-country this year.
Tell them about that race you wanted me to do, though. The Santa's coming home one. Come on.
There's no Santa. There's no race about it, but it's quite a funny little thing. If you look on online, I'll let people look online. I'll look a bit. Sinterklaas in the Netherlands is quite an interesting time of year. Culturally, it's quite an interesting event. It's a tradition essentially that Santa Claus arrives from Madrid. I think in the middle of November, there's a procession through town to celebrate Santa Claus arriving, and on December the 5th all the kiddies leave their shoes outside the door and they come and put like little biscuits in their shoes and stuff. But the thing is, he's helped by a person called Schwarz Pete, which is, translates as Black Pete. And Black Pete traditionally would have been like a gollywog type of figure, so it would have been usually a white guy blacked up with a big black wig who follows around with Santa. But it's not racist, because it's just soot from the chimneys, you see, that is on the lads' faces. So don't worry about that. So yeah, it's interesting. I'm gonna be there with my daughter. She's not gonna black up. She's gonna go normally as a little Greta, and we're gonna watch that. Unfortunately, Jermaine can't come and visit for that. But anyway, who'd have thought you'd tune into this week's podcast for a discussion on race? Who'd have thought it? We can talk about actual races, though. That's a smooth link, isn't it? There's been some races last weekend in England. Domestically,
are we having a dong? We having a dong?
Oh, yeah, because yeah, there's news, isn't it? Ready? We said about dong for the Amsterdam Marathon too, but anyway, here we go. Dong! Mainly the biggest news around is that the Great South Run, and it was an amazing performance from Ailis McColgan. She left from the gun. She was 10th this year at the
end. She left from the gun or led from the gun?
Led, that's the better phrase, yeah. She led from the gun. She took off and she won. I think she won in a really pretty brilliant time, second fastest of all time. Scottish record, 51.36. Guess how far away she was ahead of the nearest competitor? I'm going to tell you. Almost 4 minutes. Incredible. So she won that in 51.36. It was second on the all-time list behind Paula Radcliffe. And then we've got Verity Ockenden, who's done an interview on the show.
Did she beat her mother's time?
She did, yeah. Scottish record. So if people don't know, Ailis's mum, it's Liz. She is one of the greatest runners in British history. Ailis has beaten her time. Fantastic running from her. So yeah, pretty amazing. First, second was Verity Ockenden, who we've interviewed, the poet. She's a poet and a chef. Interesting girl. So she's interesting lady. She was second in 55.15, just beating Jenny Nesbitt. And in the men's British racing is pretty going pretty well at the moment, like a distance running. Mark Scott, he won the men's race in 46.57. And then second was Ben Connor, 47.16. And third was Emil Caress from Leeds. He did 47.32. So I think it was like Nike beat New Balance, beat someone else. So again, those magic shoes are winning races again. Good old magic shoes. There was also this...
They're not from them shoes. Did they make them in the Oregon Project?
I don't know where they make them. They must design them. That's the head office, right? They've done the shoes. Because
obviously, Origin Project got closed down now, isn't it?
Yeah. There was I can't remember what it was, but I saw something on Twitter today about there was some kind of furore about something Paul Radcliffe said this week about doping. I'll have to look it up. This isn't a very good news item, but yeah, she said something that's like everyone saying that's a bit controversial. Why did you say sort of that? But she is very anti-doping, isn't she, Paula? She's very strident in her voice about anti-doping. But yeah, it's something interesting. Have a listen. Go on Twitter. Search Paula Radcliffe. You probably get the furore. Anyway, that's a terrible.
What is the topic?
The topic today is basically about age. It's we're taking Aaliyah's hit song, Age Ain't Nothing But A Number. Is that Aaliyah that sang that? I don't know. Anyway, Age Ain't Nothing But A Number. We're going to talk to Jess Bizecki. I keep saying that wrong for Jess, but we're going to talk to her about her recent research about masters athletes. So she's looked at runners that have run through their lives from their teenage or their 20s through to their 50s and 60s, comparing them against people who have run, who've just started running in their 50s, and she's comparing like the bone density and fitness.
50s?
Yeah, so masters, guys that are still running their 50s and 60s.
Because, you know, technically masters is 35 now, is it?
Yeah, which is ridiculous, man. 40 should be masters. Anything lower than that is a bit crazy, because I'm a master. And I still want to feel in the, like I'm young in the main section. I don't mind when I'm 40, that's okay. But when I'm up until then, I'm staying out of that. But anyway, she compared these two groups, and it was interesting how similar their health and their fitness was, even for those who just started up quite late. So the conclusions they drew from it was that it's never too late to start, and it's never too late to start and be competitive. So if you are a runner and you're, you know, in your 50s and 40s that's listening in thinking, I don't want to race, I don't want to do that, the research that's come out from the university has shown that that's incorrect. You can do it. You can train, you can run. But also, I guess what it shows is, what I was thinking is there like a runner's age? Is there a point in your runner's, obviously you have a biological age, do you have a running age? Like,
maybe it's like a mileage age rather than a running age.
How many so miles maybe, have you got on the clock?
Yeah, left, you know?
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like if you're saying, oh, you got 15 years of running or 20 years of running, so if you haven't started until you're 35 or 40, maybe you got the 10, 15, 20 years starts sort of thing.
Yeah, you've got your amount on the clock. Because I think for me personally, I'm 37 now. I'm not getting any faster, but maybe that's because I've got other stuff in my life, do you know what I mean, like kids and all that sort of thing. There's certainly people like Steve Way, didn't he? I didn't think he even started running until he was his late 20s, but then he went on to run like 215, 216, a marathon in his 30s and 40s.
Well,
Nick Torres,
I know Joe Pavey.
Yeah.
Joe Pavey got Commonwealth gold when she was 40.
Yeah.
In
10K. Yeah. So, I mean, with them, I guess with Joe, she was running all the way through.
But then also, I like to think when you get injured, you it's almost like having your engine locked away in the garage, so you've still got the miles left.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
And she certainly had loads of injury problems like, through her through the middle of her career, so that didn't clock up her miles on the tank. Where's your mileage counter going, Jermaine?
It's probably low, but obviously I just need fuel, don't I? I just need some fuel. And then I need to shed all the bags of shopping of biscuits that I've got in the boot.
Is that talk of a comeback, surely?
No, there's no comeback. It's like Ferrari engine with a Skoda chassis, there's no comeback.
But I wonder if they're like, obviously there's no way of telling, everyone's like an individual and everyone's different, but it would be interesting to think that there was a way of, you know, telling how much you have in the tank. And like, because if I'm definitely not going to get any better, I'm definitely not going to run 220, I'm going to jack it in, that's fine.
That's probably why there's no test, because they want people to keep buying shoes.
Keep coming back for more. I'm going to keep running. We're not saying you can't run for any more than 10 years, but I think you've got a trajectory on which you can go that often has a limited shelf life.
I think it's more the lifespan is a lot shorter when you're younger. So, you know, like when you get, I remember runners that were really good when we was like 12 and 13, and they were training full time. They don't make it out of their 20s.
They just almost get
stuck. Yeah. So it's very rare you get really good youngsters become really good seniors.
Yeah, true.
So it's almost like they call it burnout, don't they? That's what we're talking about, burnout.
Yeah.
So But you think if they're starting so young, maybe their mileage clock is going up at the same rate. So obviously that's why they burn out.
It's hard to know it. Like, I think one of the things is if you keep things fresh and keep the stimulus changing, because our bodies are amazing, right? Like, I think if you trained in one way all the time for 10 years, there is probably a trajectory at which you will stop improving, right? But if you keep changing up and like adapting and changing the stimulus, maybe doing, you know, changing the way you train, having plyometrics in your training, all this kind of thing. If
Maybe
you
not
keep
change
things
it,
fresh,
tweaking. Tweaking.
tweaking, I think that is as good as resetting your mileage clock. Do you know what I mean? And then you,
Yeah. That yeah. Because like when you're younger or when you first start, it's all everything's new and it's yeah, like you say, fresh. So you're super keen. But also every time you do something, you've got massive improvements. So enthusiasm super high, you know? And then, like you said, yeah, maybe tweak to do other stuff keeps it a bit fresher. So obviously, you get new goals because you think, oh, I haven't done that thing before. Let me try and beat that again. Because the longer you go, it's harder to get, you know, improvements because you can't
Absolutely.
always get massive improvements.
Well, we chat there. Well, let's have a chat to Jess. We'll also just chat about her career because she's had a really interesting career. Many sort of English listeners or British listeners will know a bit about Jess. She used to be called Jess Coulson, obviously is married now. And she is a former European under 23 champion. She's actually running this weekend at Frankfurt, so we'll look out for Jess's result there. She's immensely talented, so she to win that under 23, if you listen to her story, she's had various injuries that have kept her up for long periods of time, most of them caused by REDS, so relative energy deficiency in sport, and she'll talk about that. But she had some horrific injuries, but continues to come back and make progress when she does train, and fingers crossed she's training now with Callum Hawkins's group. So again, if you know Callum and his exploits, he's coached by his dad, and Jess is coached by him. So she's going to talk about that and how she changed, but also this research that shows that if you are a master's athlete, come back, enjoy it, get competitive, you can still do it even in later years. You don't need to have been running all your life to be competitive and get the benefits from it. So here we go, here's Jess. So on today's show, we are talking to Jess Piasecki. I think I pronounced that
Hi.
right again, Jess. We were talking off air about that, but I'm never good. But how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Great. Thank you for having me on here. And yeah, I think that's a pretty good pronunciation. Well done.
Good. And we were just chatting a minute ago about your training at the moment. You're preparing for Frankfurt in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, I am. So, Frankfurt's been on the cards, I suppose, since August time. And yeah, it's now probably about 10 days to hopefully toe the start line, touch wood. But yeah, everything's gone to plan. I've sort of really enjoyed the build up. It's sort of the first full build up that I've done with Rob, and it's been really good. It's been really hard. Definite step up in mileage, but I'm ex sort of excited to see where I'm at really.
And Rob's it's Rob Hawkins, is that right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
Yeah, Rob
yeah.
Hawkins. Yeah.
So for part of the is it the Bob Project? It's good.
Yeah, I think Callum invented that hashtag, so we all just sort of went along with it. But I was speaking to Rob the other day, and he said perhaps we need to change that Bob Project given the recent circumstances. So I think I'll ask Callum what he thinks.
And how's it been going? How long have you been working now with Rob?
So I first moved to Rob actually early 2017, I think. But at the time, I was sort of in between injuries as usual. And I wanted to do Berlin 2017, which was just before my wedding actually. And the build up didn't really go well and didn't have sort of a platform that I really needed to be able to then build on. I was sort of going from injury to then, you know, 110% sort of thing. And I just kept getting injured every other week, and we just decided to pull the plug. And I got obviously had my wedding, and then we had we went away on a honeymoon, and then over a longer honeymoon over Christmas. And
I just sort of took a bit of a step back, really, and just enjoyed that kind of time of my life. And then started back up again in 2018, building up again, just been with Rob since then. And it's a very much a working partnership. So obviously I train in Derbyshire and Nottingham, where I live and work. And we do a lot through Training Peaks, but message, you know, most days.
Yeah.
And I'll just sort of crack on with it and fit things around work. And at the start, I was, you know, saying, what about this session? And Rob would say, yeah, that's fine, or no, or if I wanted to join in with some people. But then as time's progressed, Rob's probably now, obviously, he tells me like what to do each day, basically.
Yeah.
Especially in the marathon training. Yeah, it's been great.
What's been his major sort of input then? What's been his change to the training that's got you prepared? For those who don't know, obviously Rob is Callum's dad and Rob's dad. Derek's dad. So obviously two great marathon runners. What's been the change that he's made to your training that you think is going to stand you in good stead for Frankfurt?
He has a very calming approach. So I never sort of worry about anything. If I am worrying about it, and then I'll ask Robbie, he'll just be like, chill out, it's fine, don't worry. So that's quite nice, a nice sounding board. And you know, there's nothing too drastic, but you know, I've never done a serious marathon build up before. So this has been hard. But I was sort of ready for it, and it's been very sensible at the same time. The sessions are a lot more bigger volume, obviously, for the marathon. And I'd say I don't do many double runs at all. We might just do one longer run in the day rather than doubling up, which works well for me, because then I, you know, have all day to do my work and things. But you're also getting a full day recovery time before you have to go again. So that's one of the other things. But then also just sort of the mentality of the Hawkins family, perhaps. Is just get on with it. And, you know, Rob sometimes says to me, or quite often, if I'm just having a bit of a rant about something, you know, like, put your big girl pants on. So you just got to get out and do it. And I think my mentality has probably changed as well along with that. And especially training out with them in Flagstaff was really great. And, you know, now even if it's like dark, miserable, raining or whatever, and I've got to run, I don't really think about it anymore. It's just a job, and you got to go out there and get the job done in those times. And but I'm just really enjoying it as well. And you know, there's a lot of thought that goes into it from Rob, and I can tell that. And it's just great to be part of it.
Yeah. And what does sort of the effect of Callum running so well? Because he just missed out on a medal. He was fourth at the World Championships. How does that affect you as someone who's within his training group, within coached by the same coach? What impact does that have on you and your training?
Well, it's obviously very inspiring. I think, you know, whether you're in there or not, you know, watching Callum come through like he did was fabulous. But I know he would have been super gutted that he was so close to a medal, given you know, he's so competitive and everything. But it was amazing feat, especially in those conditions. And I think it instills confidence, I think, a little bit, because I know the sessions he's done, I've done as well, obviously at relative pace. But if we've done, you know, similar sessions, and you think, right, well, if I've completed that training and so's Callum's just come fourth in the world, then I must be able to do something different because I'm still standing as well. So it sort of instills that kind of confidence. But it's also just great to see, because Callum's such a nice guy, and all the Hawkins guys, they're just, they will really help you and look after you, as well as having that, you know, tough love approach at the same time.
And is there any particular sessions you remember as being sort of the hardest in your build up so far?
I think there's, you know, the sessions like that could be a 24 mile long run, and you've got a lot of marathon pace effort within there without stopping. You know, those are the hard ones, because there's no let up and there's no hiding. But and you know, once you get to the end of it, you think, right, that was really hard, but I've got through it, and I've completed it now and banked it. So completing the hard sessions is rewarding at the same time. And I think some of the sessions, you know, a lot of people do like in and out keys and in and outs of various distances. And I've done a couple of those, you know, in the middle of a field where I train on my own with no one else there. And completing something like that on your own, I think it just makes you feel right, okay, I can do quite a lot of things now.
And thinking about your career as a whole, obviously you've had some really fantastic performances in your career, but a lot of it, of those highs, have been punctuated by some long periods of lows where you've had a series of injury problems, including, I was reading this morning about like one problem with your spine where you lost 3 centimeters in height, is that right?
Yeah. So I'm going to put my scientific head on now. So the spine is what they called, it's made of trabecular bones. So it's more spongy. It's less dense to begin with. So if you're going to have problems with your bone health due to whatever reason, then the spine is more likely to succumb to that first before any other bone in the body.
Right.
Because your shins, your forearms and things like that, there's a lot more cortical dense bone in there to begin with because you're loading it directly every day and using, you know, your limbs. Your spine receives some loading, but it's not sort of directly impacted. So it's made of that spongy bone. So for me, obviously, because of the various problems I had, my spine was one of the first things that went in terms of my bone health, like deterioration. So that's why it happens in the spine. And I think a lot of people get like hip problems as well. It's a similar problem there.
Yeah. And you've written and talked about kind of maybe the reasons why behind these problems with bone health and REDS, is it relative energy deficiency rather in sport and how that's contributed to this. When did it all start? When did things start going kind of a bit pear-shaped for you running in terms of your health and injury problems?
Yeah, so I think my injury cycle actually started when I was about 18. I got my first stress fracture in the navicular bone in the foot when I was 18. And I'd obviously had a good year before that going to European and World Cross and European Juniors. So that was my first injury, and I was quite new to the sport as well, so didn't really understand rehab or physio or anything like that. So from there, between then and, you know, 2006, 2007 winter season, that was my last full winter that I had until 2018, 2019.
Wow.
I've never had, you know, a consistent winter. You know, I might have had 3 to 4 month blocks maximum, yeah. But it's always been interspersed with injury. I've had a number of like bone problems, but also muscle and tendon problems. The spine specifically, that started early 2012, actually, before I won the European under 23 cross country.
Wow.
I was just out on a run and I was at St. Mary's at the time for an On Camp with Kelly event, I think. And I happened to be doing a run and I just felt a twinge, and afterwards it was quite painful. And I was coached by Mick Woods at the time and we didn't know what it was. It was really, really excruciatingly painful, the first one. And it took about 6 weeks to diagnose. I eventually had an x-ray and they found it was a compression fracture of my vertebrae in like T6, T7, which is sort of like mid spine. So if, you know, for females, if you're wearing a sports bra, it's sort of like around that sort of middle area, like that sort of level. And then, so I think I was then told to go to like a specialist doctor in Sheffield who I do see now, still sort of monitored yearly. And I was put on some bisphosphonate medication, which is sort of normally prescribed to postmenopausal females because of losing estrogen with the menopause. So you take this tablet once a week and it stabilizes your bone metabolizing cells. So you have bone cells that build bone up and bone cells that break them down. And what this tablet did was just stop any of that activity at all. So you're not going to gain bone, but you're also not going to lose it. So sort of providing a protective mechanism. Obviously, then I think from the August 2012 to Christmas, I had a good consistent block of training and I won the European under 23s. Everything was great and I never really had another back problem. I had other injuries, but I didn't have another spinal problem until start of 2016, and that was following on from my plantar fascia tear. I was so keen to sort of get to the Olympic trials. I didn't want to miss out. I probably rushed training back a little bit and my spine flared up again, and it was quite drastic that time. I had a lot of detailed imaging and there was further damage in my spine that I wasn't aware of previously.
Yeah.
So I then had to go on injection medication. So I injected my stomach with this, it was like a little EpiPen thing, for 18 months. And this was more of a medication that would speed up the bone producing cells.
Right.
So really lay down bone quite quickly.
Yeah.
And I came off that medication towards the end of 2017, and I can't take that medication ever again in my lifetime. So you sort of have to make the choice. Do I want it now, or, you know, when I'm 70, I might need it, but these things might change, you know, when the time we get there with science being what it is. So that was all sort of my spinal problems. And I think when I was younger, I've always said, you know, I never had a drastic eating problem for a long time or anything like that. I was very healthy and perhaps still not eating enough because I wasn't aware of all these kinds of problems.
Mm.
And also for me in particular, why my bone health was probably quite severely affected in comparison to other females who may have been through similar problems. It was because I never actually started my menstrual cycle when I was a youngster, you know, when I was a teenager. I never got that initial menarche. So the cycle is so important during puberty because that's when you lay down your bone health that you're going to sustain for the rest of your life.
Wow.
So by not starting a cycle, like, you don't get that influx of estrogen that lays down that foundation of bone for later on. So when I got to later age, my bones were still quite poor, and obviously I was still training and things like that. So the foundation which I was running on wasn't very firm, as it were. So in a nutshell, that's sort of where it all started.
And how do you remedy that? Okay. So without sort of the, can you come back from that? Can you get into a regular menstrual cycle now, and can you kind of put down, like, you know, this foundation at this stage?
So for me, how it happened was, because I'd never started my cycle as a youngster, I was then put on the oral contraceptive pill later on in life and had the perception that that was fine and everything was working. I was getting some estrogen from that, but actually the estrogen you get from a medication like that is not enough to stimulate your bones compared to it naturally. It's a small amount, but it's not really how much you need, especially going through puberty and developing bone health for later on in life. So you can then start your cycles, as in, you know, I suppose go through puberty a little bit again. And that I did. I decided myself, right, I'm just going to come off this pill because I wasn't particularly running a lot at the time anyway. And things did start naturally, which was absolutely fabulous. I did consciously reduce training in that time and consciously eat a lot more. Which, you know, I decided that I wanted to do that and make sure that I could give myself the best chance for just general health, really, because I was a bit fed up of being injured all the time anyway. And I think you can, in terms of bone health increase, and you can make gains. There are publications to say that you can make gains in terms of your bone health later on in life. The gains will probably be a lot smaller than if you made those changes, you know, during your youth between the ages of, you know, say 12 and 25 maximum, really. There's been studies done in older populations, like a hopping study. They had unilateral hopping study. So you get people hopping on one limb, but not the other one, and measure the differences in the bone health of the limbs after, you know, a 16-week period. And there are gains that you can make, but they're a lot smaller later on in life. For me, I was able to make those gains because I went on the medication.
Right. Okay.
But even if you didn't go on the medication, there are still ways you can improve bone health.
And are you going to have to kind of monitor that quite closely then through the remainder of your career? Is it, do you have to have a lot of checkups and things? And are you very cautious about what you do with your training?
Yeah, so I have recently, up until now, been monitored every 6 months. So I'd have a DEXA scan and a checkup with a specialist bone doctor. Because my last checkup was quite successful, they'd seen increases in my bone health beyond what they'd normally expect, because for me, I went on the medication, but then also started my cycles up again, which was sort of overcompensating for any loss that might happen when you come off that medication. And so I sort of got two bouts of increases. So now I have yearly checkups and will continue to do so for quite some time. So then in terms of training, I'm just very conscious, as in, you know, I've still managed to sustain a lot of mileage in this last build up, but it's been a lot gradual. You know, I started back running, I'd say May, June of 2018, in terms of building back up from another injury. And I really, really took my time. You know, I suppose this time last year, I was happy to doing 50 mile a week with lots of cross training. And I've made sure I've had a full year before I then build on top of that and go into the bigger miles.
Yeah.
You know, I really believe that you do need that foundation there until you can build on top of.
And like, in terms of your, obviously we discussed kind of your physical health going forward, but at the time, what was it like for you mentally, like your mental health? Because knowing, like you said, in between these times of problems with various bones and stuff, you won the European Under 23 Championship. So it's so obvious that you've got talent, if you can keep yourself fit, to run, you know, at the very top of the tree. How did you manage to kind of keep yourself sane through all these periods of setbacks?
Yeah, I'd say that, you know, you touched on it there, because I'd had some success that sort of kept me going. And I knew I still had more to give. Every time I'd get injured, you know, I think when I was younger and I got injured, you know, there'd be tears, there would be the end of the world, so on and so forth. But as you get older and more mature, I'd just be like, right, okay, you know, where's the bike? When's the pool open? And it'd just be another thing, I'd get over it. And obviously the support I have around me, like my husband, family, you know, I have another side of my life that is still really important to me. And I've always had that, in, not only in terms of my sport, but my work. You know, I really want to pursue that and do well in that career. So you sort of turn the focus onto something else for some time. But because I've had the successes, I have still kept going. I've always wanted to come back. I've always wanted to start the build-up with running again. And there's always sort of a plan at the back of my mind. You know, I think as soon as people do get injured, they're like, right, okay, 6 weeks, okay, another 5 weeks to build up. Okay, what race can I do? And that kind of process goes through your mind. I just love the sport. You know, I love running, I love being outside, and then I'm the sports fan as well. You know, the World Champs that was on now, we were watching every night without fail, catching up on iPlayer and all the events. You know, I love it. So I still want to be part of that, and I will keep going until one day I wake up and think, now I'm done. I'm not sure when that'll be, or but you know, it still keeps me going. And you know, touch wood, I've not had any major injuries for a year now, which is like amazing for me. But I'm not saying there won't be any to come and it won't be hard, but I'm still gonna keep trying.
Yeah. And then, and obviously, with your new job, you're lecturer in exercise physiology at Nottingham Trent. Is that right?
Yeah, that's it. Yep, and Nottingham Trent University. Yeah.
And you're doing a lot of work on, from what I can see, on the menstrual cycle, and it's clear that now that's quite an important biomarker for female athletes. When you were going through this period, did you, as in this time in your life, was it important? Was the importance of a period made clear to you? Was it something, or was it something that you kind of knew that it was bad, you weren't having them, but just didn't really want to discuss? Did you know the importance of not having a period when you were in this at this time?
To be honest, I would say no, not really. It all sort of stemmed around then what was called the female athlete triad, and I was made aware of that like after I got my first stress fracture. And I think a lot of people my age would say the same, that it was always like, oh, by the way, have you heard of this? You know, it wasn't as readily talked about topic as it is now. Mm. And I think it's great that it is talked about now. And but my mum did take me to the doctors when I was 15, when I was 16, and I hadn't started things. And the doctor just said, oh, come back, you're sporty. Mm. So I think not only does that information need to come down and educate the athletes themselves, like, you know, when I was that age, and I think that is happening more and more now. Mm. But it's, you know, it's the clinicians, the GPs that also need to be made aware of it. Yeah. That it's not normal, and prescribing or contraceptives may not be the best option for that person if that's the reason. There could be other ways of getting around it. But I think we are getting there slowly but surely. These things do take time, as always. But as when I was youngster, it wasn't as readily available now. But, you know, I know things like young athlete camps, for example. I've been to them the past 2 years and given a talk to the youngsters on all this kind of stuff. So I do know it's happening because I'm there, which is really nice to see.
And you're doing some research currently, aren't you? What related to the menstrual cycle, is that correct?
Yeah, so I'd say my research stems sort of two strands at the minute. I'm not sure how long I can sustain that, and probably have to specialize later on. But while I'm quite junior, only a year or so off from my PhD, I can sort of try and get involved in the two. So I do some research around sort of female physiology. So I have a few studies looking at various sort of performance indicators and health indicators across the cycle, and how that compares to all contraceptive pill users. I recently got awarded the British Milers Club research scholarship thing, which was very kind of them, which gave me a bit of money to be able to do the research. So any listeners, if they want to take part in my research, please get in touch.
Great.
And then I also do a lot of aging research, so particularly around master athletes, so people who have been exercising most of their lives or taking up the activity later on in life, and now sort of age 60 and over. So what that gives us as researchers is how physical activity can sort of offset all the other diseases and health consequences that we normally associate with aging. And we can compare them to sort of more sedentary people and look at a number of sort of physiological indicators. So they're sort of my two areas that I research.
Great. And you had something picked up by the New York Times recently.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah,
study?
Yeah, it was really cool to see. And I think I was on BBC Radio 4, Radio 5 Live in the morning. And then I think I spoke on Radio 4 like for about 30 seconds, I think, which was quite interesting. Yeah.
And what was that research? What was the findings?
Yeah, so that paper, that research project was looking at how your training age, I suppose, can affect your bone health and body composition. So we had master athletes, again, over the age of 60, some of whom had been competing in athletics since they were 18, 20, and some who had taken it up after the age of 50, you know, perhaps when children have left home or they've retired and taken up a new sport or hobby sort of thing. And what was interesting about that paper was that the muscular benefits in terms of your strength, your power, and also body composition, so fat mass and lean mass, which, you know, we want older people to maintain as much lean mass as possible into older age to prevent anything like sarcopenia or frailty. The people who'd taken up physical activity later on in life still had very similar muscle and body composition measurements to those that had done physical activity for quite a long time.
Okay.
Sort of saying that, you know, it's never too late to start. People can take up activity and still reap the rewards when they're older, which is, you know, all the more reason to encourage more people to take up some kind of physical activity.
Oh, great. Okay. I was just thinking that I had a friend who was a doctor who, I think this is a totally his own made up research based on his own experience. And he basically said, I remember we would, his diet was absolutely terrible. And he was, and this is probably isn't the sort of thing you should be telling people who are interested in health, but he was saying, don't worry about cholesterol. As long as you do it for a bit before you get old, you'll be fine. But that, I guess that is in a bad way, it's a similar kind of message in that you can, there's no, it's never too late to start thinking about getting fit.
Yeah, exactly. Look at people like Sinead Diver, is it, the Australian?
Yeah.
She's 41 now and still running PBs, but she didn't take up running till later on in life. So the actual impact her body's undergone is probably quite small overall relative to everybody else.
Yeah.
So I think there is some individuality in it as well. But I think as you get older, probably around the age of 40 is when musculoskeletally you start to lose a little bit of muscle mass, you start to lose a little bit of bone health, and then significantly more so from the age of 50. That's probably where you have to sort of think of it in terms relatively to the people of your age.
Okay.
So, you know, if you think about, you know, you said you're 37, but still running and things like that, compared to other 37-year-olds, you're probably still making gains, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And again, I think as you get later on in life, I think that's probably what you have to do, which is why, you know, the master athletes have the age group categories.
Yeah.
A lot of the master athletes we speak to, they can't wait to get into sort of the next age category because it means they're at the lower end.
Yeah.
So if they're like 69, like, oh, I'm 70 in a couple of weeks, it means I'm in the 70 to 75 category. So they're at like the lower end of the scale. So it means they can, they've got more likely chance of winning and performing better.
Yeah.
So it's all relative to your age, I think. Well,
absolutely. I remember there's a guy called, was it Ed Whitlow, I can't remember his name, but it's a guy in his 80s, he was winning marathons, always winning, he was breaking world records for his age group, and I remember him saying, oh, I'm looking forward to getting into the 82 age group because that record looks soft to me and that sort of thing.
Definitely,
that's what I've got to look forward to now, I think. Oh, no, I've got 3 years left. You said 40, right? So I've got 3 years left to keep going.
It's not all doom and gloom.
And I guess, like you said, individuality is important. Like, there's different stimulus that I guess people like Paul Martelletti, an English marathon runner, he didn't really, he's in his late 30s, 40s. He started running 2:16s. I guess there's just a change in stimulus for him brought about different improvements. I guess it's always, there's always ways you can improve if you hit on the right thing to improve upon, I guess.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's like when you start the sport for the first time, you see massive, massive improvements, don't you?
Yeah.
And it's still quite exciting.
Right, I've got to start something new. That's what my plan is. Anyway, I shouldn't keep you too long because it's quite late after your physio tonight. But so I've only got three quick questions to ask you. And they are, if you could be anywhere running now, where would it be?
I thought about this earlier. It's Carsington Water, which is a little, well, it's not little, it's a reservoir about 5 minutes drive from my house, and it's an 8-mile loop round. It's quite hilly, but it's lovely, you know, on a crisp autumn morning. So
lovely.
I'd like to have the weather as well, please.
Yeah, okay, that's fine, you can have that. I love the autumn. The autumn's the nicest to run in, but this autumn has just been so wet and boring.
Oh, I know.
Every day.
Or like grim.
Yeah, wait till next year. Anyway, second question is, recommend our listeners something. It could be anything from a physical thing like a book or a film to an experience or a must-do thing.
I'm going to say a book that I'm reading now, which is, I'm nearly done actually. It's really good. It's called Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine. It's about this woman who's obviously, she's about 30 now. She's obviously had quite a troubled childhood and isn't sort of up to, she's not quite socially aware to begin with, but it's just how a life unfolds. It's really, really good.
Fantastic. We'll try and get a link to that on the show notes, as well as actually try and put a link to your, if anyone wants to get involved with the research, we'll try and put a link to that as well, just to mention that.
That'd be fabulous. Thank you.
And the final question is, what's the greatest endurance performance of all time, in your opinion?
I was thinking about this earlier, and I have no idea, because they happen all the time. So I think Paula Radcliffe's 215 from London, I think that was fabulous. That was a very mean feat.
Yeah.
But then you've got people like, who was it? That American who swam the channel 8 times, wasn't it? Recently. Is she called Sarah something?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's amazing.
Yeah, okay.
And then I also think about things like Callum in Doha. That was an amazing feat in those kind of conditions.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I've given you 3 there.
Yeah, we'll mark down all 3. Fantastic. Well, thanks a lot, Jess. Thanks for your time. And
no problem.
Thanks for chatting this evening. Very good to get your perspective on marathon running, I guess, and Reds and the research you're doing. So thanks very much for chatting.
No worries. Thank you. Just thanks for having me.
No worries. Cheers. So that was Jess there. Good to chat to her. We forgot in the news section, there were some marathons in the UK, and we had some good winners. We had some Jonathan Poole. Do you know Jonathan Poole? He won the Abingdon Marathon in 2:29:52. He's a Serpentine lad. He's a friend of mine. He did very well. And there's some women, Emma Navesy, who is her first ever race at the distance. She ran 2:57. Pretty impressive. And there's a Yorkshire Marathon. Charlene Jacobs Conradi, she ran 2:46. She won. And in the men's race, Mark Buckingham, 2:21. He won. And I also missed.
He's back. Buckingham was back.
Is that him?
He used to do steeplechase and then he moved to triathlon.
Oh, right. Okay. Interesting. Well, yeah, he won. He won. He was quite comfortably 3 minutes ahead of everyone else. And there was also a race in Toronto, Toronto Waterfront Marathon, and a couple of Britain's best in there. So we had Josh Griffiths, who was really consistent runner. He always runs around 2:14, 2:15. He was 13th, I think, in the race in 2:15:02. Nick Hale, he ran 2:18. In the women's race, we had a good little battle for the men's. We had Joanna Regan. She was 22nd in 2:45, and Kate Drew is 26th in 2:49. So good performances there from the England team. What I want to say about the England team is, why did we get the sponsor Kukuri? Have you seen this? We used to be sponsored by all sorts of great brands. Puma, when I was running, we had New Balance, had a lovely vest. We've all gone down this Kukuri route. I don't know Kukuri very well, but it just ain't as nice.
But maybe it's cheap.
Maybe it's cheap. That's true. Well, they must
budget cuts. They're getting ready for Brexit, you know.
Yeah. Oh God. Anyway, we've done too much political talk, Jermaine. We can't talk about that. We've had a review though, and it's a good review. Shall I read it out? Here we go.
Yeah, go on.
So it says, in the title says, informing and entertaining. We've talked about race today, so yeah, it is. And it's from the person called Nickname Shite.
So I like that one. Yeah,
Mr. Nick, his surname's Name Shite. Sent this. He said the shows are relevant to every level of runner. Easy listening that is both very informative and entertaining. A great range of interviews that manages to cover the breadth of all things running. So that was a lovely review. Thanks for that, Nick. Mr. Nickname Shite. So yeah, that's kind of it.
Yeah, Reply back with that little emoji, chocolate emoji.
Yeah, yeah. I should do, yeah. So that was great. But we should inform you, we're going to have a little bit of a break. There's one more show to come, and then we're going to have a couple of week break. So we'll put out, we've got an interview next week with Phil Hewitt, and then we're going to probably have a little discussion in Frankfurt, and then we are going to have a couple of week break. So get your fill, send us a review, keep us coming back for more, and we'll see everyone in a couple of weeks. What are you up to, Jermaine? Have you got anything coming up?
Maybe Iceland in a couple of weeks.
Ah, what, uh-huh. You're going to get a prawn ring and some ice cream and stuff from Iceland. Sorry, that's a bad joke. Kerry Katona. Anyway,
no, see the Northern Lights.
Ah, nice, fantastic. With the lady.
Yeah, yeah.
Very romantic. Very nice. Enjoy.
So yeah, that's it really. And then obviously work.
Yeah,
it's the usual.
And we're next time we hear from you, we're going to discuss how many fireworks get thrown in the window of your bus.
Well, there'll be plenty of stories for sure.
Yeah, nice one. Right, we'll leave everyone to it, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Cool. See ya. Cool. Bye.
Bye.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same Game Parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Don't miss the biggest Maytag sale of the year at Lowe's. You'll find the Maytag appliances you need, when you need them, at a great price. Plus, when you buy two select laundry appliances, you'll get up to a $100 bonus via instant rebate. Shop Maytag at Lowe's. We help, you save. Offer valid through 531. See store for pricing and offer details. Advertise savings on all major Maytag appliances through Maytag.com and participating retailers. Prices may vary. Additional terms and conditions apply.